Off the Ball Rugby.
He enjoyed being out in the open country, but the pass that Gibson Park gave Ioane in that 65th minute, can't say enough about it. The technical beauty of it.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a hard thing to do.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Zeebo going on his own! He gets the try!
The Red 78.
We're both Munster people.
Trevor gets over the line! Try for Munster!
Nobody knows Munster rugby better.
Hello and welcome to the Red 78. Rory O'Hagan from Off the Ball, joined by Munster legends Alan Quinlan and Fiona Hayes. To discuss, as I say, with a deep inhale of breath, Munster's defeat to Exeter Chiefs in the Champions Cup, or the Challenge Cup, so we'll have to discuss that in a little bit. A disappointing defeat for Munster, 31-21 was how it finished. Munster not turning up at all for the first half. We'll get into the weeds of that. We'll also name our star of the week, and we'll have a look ahead to a big clash now with Benetton. A lot of pressure on Munster to secure a top 8 finish in the URC, so lots to discuss on the show, a lot of comments into the show as well. But thanks so much indeed for tuning into us today. Fiona Quinney, how are you guys? Fiona, have you recovered from your travels over to Exeter? Have you recovered from the match?
No. No. The misery of it. I had to rewatch it when I came home against my will, but I did to obviously look at stats and different things. But oh, it was so disappointment. Obviously, Exeter, it's a lovely place. The fans were lovely. The stadium, everything about it. But that first half will live in my memory for all the wrong reasons. There was just an air around the place. There was a lot of Munster fans over, and it was just after the match, real disappointing buzz everywhere. Even, I think, I actually happened to be sitting beside Gareth Steenson on the flight over from Dublin, and I was kind of asking him, because he's obviously coaching the women, but he owns a pub in Exeter and all that, so I was asking him, what you think the Munster chances, and I don't think he thought they were very high. And I was thinking, oh, smart me, I'm going to go into his pub now after and celebrate. But no, unfortunately he was correct, and Exeter were far too strong. But I will say Munster were asleep for that first half. Shocking stuff.
Certainly were. Mr. Quinlan, how are you, sir?
Oh, good, thanks, Rory. Yeah, it was disappointing. I was watching, I wasn't there like Fiona, but the manner of the first half, I think, was very frustrating to watch. Just I think they were very soft tries, three of the tries that Exeter scored, the first three, the fourth one from Faye Woboso was a lot of people falling on off tackles, and that comes from a turnover as well. So unfortunately it was a bad afternoon for anyone watching or the players themselves, for Munster in general.
Yeah, it certainly was. Let's discuss it, though. Let's find out what went wrong for Munster. First, though, like, we've gotten so many comments. It's the most comments I think we've ever gotten on the show about that Munster performance and their exit from the competition, Fiona. And look, a lot of angry Munster fans out there getting in touch with us.
Yeah, and thanks again for sending them in, guys. A lot of angry fans, but we can chop through a couple of them here and read out a few. But this one's interesting, Quinny. You might have a look at this. Donica Curran said, "Why, after winning the toss, why would you like to play into the wind in the first half away from home in a must-win match? A crazy decision. Was it captain team decision or did it come from management?" And I will tell you this: I don't know how it looked like on the telly, but that wind was absolutely crazy over there.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I it seems like a crazy decision when you end up conceding that much, but in fact I was always a fan of playing into the wind in the first half, because I think you know, the way my mentality would be, well, it takes teams a little bit to get into games, and it takes a bit of cohesion, and you're fresher, you can frustrate the opposition and all that kind of stuff. And then you keep the score down, or you do well in that first half against the wind, and that's a big psychological advantage too, you know what I mean, in the second half. I know some people, like, and coaches over the years would have wanted to play with the wind and get scores up and kick penalties and all that kind of stuff and build a score. It works both ways.
I don't know if the wind is going to be there in the second half. How do you know that? Like, it could die down.
Yeah, I know. That's, well,
And it did.
It's having a crystal ball scenario, but yeah, I must say I could be wrong, and you know what I mean. I was always play into the wind, play into the wind. I actually never thought of, oh God, the wind could be gone in the second half. But
That's
no, I was always play into the wind. So yeah, it's wrong if you do it. But look, if you have, and probably if you look at this Munster team, I think they probably don't have the forward power and dominance to be able to hold on to the ball and work their maul and you know, make close in carries and pick and goes and all that. Like, to be fair, our team and a lot of that team would have been well used to playing in mucky, wet conditions, coming up through the AIL and you know, playing in difficult weather throughout the winter. And so I was kind of always used to that dogfight and playing with or against the wind in the first half. So maybe that's my mentality, but I understand the person sending a message there. Maybe a team like Munster on Saturday, maybe it would have been the you know, play with the wind. The downside of playing with the wind, if you don't build a bit of a score and the opposition are, like, Munster should have scored a try when they broke through the middle. And really, if Munster were tidy and didn't make the mistakes and errors, Fiona, the scoreline probably could have been 14-7 at halftime.
Yeah.
We like, the reality is Munster gifted them 3 tries here.
100%.
They gifted them 3 tries. Now, look, okay, the brilliance from Faye Wabosa at the end, I'm putting that in as a really soft try because, number one, it comes from a really poor turnover in the middle of the field. It's 38 and a half minutes gone. You've about a minute to run down the clock, and you get in that way, you know, at 24, which is still a lot, but you give away a 7-pointer right before halftime. And so, look, I get it. I'm going on with the answer. I get it about the wind, but, you know, I wouldn't blame Tyburn for that, because if I was beside Tyburn as a player, I'd be saying, play against the wind. Let's go. Let's tear into these fellas. Don't give them anything soft. But we're a team now that likes to gift the opposition scores, and that's what happened there.
Yeah. We go on to Christopher Murphy. He says, clearly something is going on behind the scenes, and whatever it is cannot be good. Defensively, they've been all over the place. 2 wins out of 10 tells the whole story. Hoping to scrape into URC knockouts is what has it come to, which is sad. It's on the players to fix that, I suppose. Well, player-wise,
Just on that, I think we've had a problem all season with... and look... It's probably something that Clayton McMillan may look back on. I think he's tried to use his squad. He's tried to make changes. I think he's found out some information about different players, about what they're capable of, what their mentality is like, what their ability to step in from the cold is like. And he's made a lot of changes for nearly every game. There's been multiple 8-10 changes every time. That does not help in a sense of continuity around defence. And you know that yourself, Fiona, if you're playing in as a centre partnership with somebody and you get a good rapport, and 1 week you make a mistake and you cost a line break, and you say to your partner beside you, sorry, I pushed too far, or I shot up too quick, you can kind of fix it for next week, that you're talking to them and you stay connected coming up. And little things like that, even for me as a back rower, you know, if I'm defending off the side of scrums with my number 8 inside me, that, you know, I don't overshoot and leave him isolated and vice versa. You can fix little things, and sometimes you don't get punished with someone scoring a try, but somebody makes a line break and you scramble back. I just think when you have multiple changes, different guys coming in, and I know people say, well, they train together all week. It's replicating that in matches that you become... You fix things. So that's one part of it that probably hasn't helped the concession of tries and the losses in the games. The other side of it is being on the players is, yes, 100% here, because I think I read a lot of those comments last night. Some of them are a little bit over the top. Some of them are bang on. Some of them are maybe a little bit soft on people. There's a mixture of all of the above. the players here, and the worrying thing for me at the weekend, and you've heard me say this for a long, long time, work rate, desire, passion, commitment, all that kind of stuff. And again, I'm not saying anybody made a decision to go out in the field and be a bit lazy in that first half, but there's certain things that happen in that first half that just are not good enough for this level for players. It's not the required standard. The urgency to run back, to sprint back. A lot of comments were saying, people who were at the match saying that players looked like they were walking around the place at times, not showing that urgency and fight, falling off tackles. So that's on the players. And they, you know, again, it's this unbelievable inconsistency we have for, you know, bar the first five games of the season, we've had incredible inconsistency around urgency, desire, work rate, all that kind of stuff. It's like chalk and cheese. You know, you go to the Bulls, the Sharks the week before, you go to the Bulls, you get a performance that you think this is something to build on, and then you go to the Exeter and the first half was just dreadful, really. The second half, much better, which you expect. What's going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, they're going to come out and try and, you know, but I just... It takes too many mistakes and too many situations like this for a reaction, and they shouldn't be having to dig deep for these reactions all the time. So, yes, it is on the players, and there was some worrying stuff that went on in that first half the other day, but it's happening a lot, and it's happened a lot in these games that they've lost, and the basic errors and the mistakes. So, yeah, it's very frustrating. I think the coaches... have to take some responsibility in the sense of, certainly for Clayton McMillan, making a lot of changes. You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. It's like playing with the wind or against the wind. If those changes and those... Like, I remember after five games, Fiona, I think we were complimenting Munster on maybe having 30 or 30 something players have played in the first five games.
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant. It's just the nature of the way things go. You have to get results for those things to be good decisions as a coach, you know, and you know that making decisions as a coach. But I think we've seen the evidence of a lot of these changes at times have just disrupted the flow of the team and probably, you know, made them quite disjointed as opposed to bringing fresh players coming in and actually playing well. The form of some players has been really, really poor when they've got opportunities.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And as you said, you're bringing people in, and then you've someone like Kilgallen that hasn't played in 3 months coming into that starting thing. Obviously, you know, he's chomping at the bit to try and get onto the team, but then sometimes
should,
lack of rugby
be
as well.
Better. I think Dermot Kilgallen's a very good player.
Yeah.
And I think he's in any player's defence, if you're out for a long period of time, it's hard and you try and force things and you can make a mistake. Tacker Abrahams looked very, very poor and disinterested at times. He looked like a player who's already gone to the Bulls for next season. You know, two new wingers, I think, you know, it's... Tom Farrell didn't play the week before. It's just there's lots of changes there. And look, I get it. You do have to freshen things up a bit, but... it's been tricky, but... You know, the broader thing here is there's some players are going to have to look at themselves and there's going to be tough decisions made around performances. Like, at the end of the day, there's no, you know, getting personal about any players. I think there's still a lot of good players, but I think there's some people in the group and there's the level, you know, can they be better? Yes. Are they showing that to people this season? No. They're not playing to a required level. And I think... It just begs the question: is are they good enough? Are some of these players good enough to be playing? And they need to perform better. The standard of, I think, the mistakes and the errors are just calamitous at this stage. It's just such basic stuff that's happening, and it's just killing the team. It's they're in a tricky place at the moment, and that's the one question everybody asks. I know you have more messages to read out, but everywhere I've gone the last couple of days are, what's going on with Munster? What's going on with this Munster team? What's going on with this Munster team? And it's everybody's kind of concerned what's happening at the moment. And look, it's difficult. They're in a tough place. They're in a tough place at the moment. And I think they're better than that. Like, you know, how can you go to the Bulls last week and put in a performance that should be winning the game for you and then just make those basic errors in that first half against Exeter last Saturday?
It's mad. Tara Spain said the first half was disgraceful. We gifted the game away. Too many players were lost or didn't care. Crowley stood tall in the second half, but he can't do it alone. Was at the game and I wished I wasn't. Exeter fans were very respectful. Next four games will tell the true character. And then I suppose we can put this one in as well just to have a look at it as well, because I know a lot of people have been asking this. Ryan says, how do Munster fix their front row issue? Not a single big unit coming through year on year, while Leinster schools seem to be producing big men by the time they get to the academy. Do they need to start giving better diet and S&C plans for the schools to use?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the diet and the plans for the S&C players and, you know, it's producing big front row players is there's no secret to that, really. I think it's... I don't know. They're just not coming through. Like, feeding up some young fellas and put them on a special diet obviously helps if you get to that level. I know from an S&C point of view, the quality of training and the S&C stuff is always something that you get benefits out of from a younger age. And that bears fruit for you. And I'm sure that's happening throughout the province.
Do you think in schools, though, Quinny, they're happy with the more mobile front row, so they're not putting, you know, emphasis into maybe some of the naturally bigger guys because they're not getting around the park at that age? And obviously you can get away with that metre and a half push at scrum time at schools. Do you need to look at that?
Yeah, you don't get tested as much, obviously, but... very difficult to take 17s, junior cup teams or 15 or they, but you know, senior cup players in schools rugby at 17, 18 and you know, grab them individually. I think you can obviously work with them, all the schools. I've seen it in the Leinster schools. I never had any clue what happened in schools rugby throughout my career because, you know, I didn't have any involvement and I went through the club system, but you know, I've seen it with my own young lad in Dublin. The school system, it's second to none. It's like a mini academy, and it's not just it's. And I'm sure that the work and the effort that's been put in with the schools down in here, I don't know. I think if you get naturally big lads who play in the front row and you hope that they can come through. And it's a numbers game as well, because the numbers game up in Dublin is probably, you know, there's probably way more players to choose from. And invariably, you're going to get guys who are probably, you're going to get more opportunities and more people to choose from. So, I don't know if that's one of the major problems. I think, you know, I've said this before, when Ron Lagara retired, you know, a lot of fly halves came after him, but there was never anyone at the same level as him. Mm. Sometimes it's, you need a bit of luck with a few fellas coming through. And look, maybe it's part of the whole systematic review and something that needs to be looked at, but I'm sure it is behind the scenes. I think Munster is very beneficial and from an Irish team point of view, and they, you know, the same as the other provinces, to get more players coming through. So that's the challenge for Munster, to try and, we produce a lot of loose forwards, we produce a lot of, you know, hookers, scrum halves, but props are a hard kind of commodity to come across, especially big props anywhere.
Yeah. Okay, we'll finish on this so we can go through it. Phil Quinlan, a team of ex-Munster pros has to be assembled to help guide the club forward. So are you going in as forwards coach or what, when he's taking the line
no,
out?
No, I think, look, I think a lot of people do ask me and my ex-teammates, and probably we have a 20-year reunion in Cork on Thursday night for the first Tyne Cup win in 2006. And, you know, there's a lot of big characters who'll be in that room. There were big characters in the team. And I think, you know, obviously Anthony was involved, Anthony Foley, Dennis Leamies, Mike Prendergast, Mossy Lawler. There's guys who were involved in that group and that era and that have been involved with the Munster senior team. There's some people behind the scenes have been on the board. And it's a nice thing to, you know, it's maybe a nice flowery kind of thought to think that, God, the ex-players could come back in. And there's no magic wand here. I think there's a lot of good stuff happening in Munster rugby, and it's the negative narrative is out there now, because ultimately you're judged on, and really you're judged on the senior team more than anything, aren't you? That's where the bread and butter stuff and the decisions are made. You know, I've seen comments about people in the academy, and I think there's some very good young players coming through in the academy. We've had, you know, we had a number of people on the Ireland under 20s playing starring roles, really. But the here and now is the senior team, and that's what where you need to get performances. And I think the results, they don't lie. If you look at the fixtures, it's loss, 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 win, loss, 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 win, loss, loss. You know, there's just so many losses in that log going back to, you know, back to just before Christmas, and it's very frustrating to see. So, I work in a different kind of scenario now, and you know, we all want to see Munster rugby do well. We want to see the Munster team do well, but they're in a precarious position at the moment. I don't think it's as bad as maybe the feeling. I think there's still a lot of positives there. I think they're just going through a bad run. There certainly needs to be readjustments and probably a deeper look into where they're at the moment. But as regards, there's plenty of other my ex-teammates that they could, you know, call upon. Obviously, if I was asked for my opinion ever, which I doubt it, because, you know, I'm working in the media now, but I'm thinking, you know, there's people like John Hayes, who I've always kind of advocated for. We barely see John. I keep in touch with John a lot, but he's making a rare appearance at the event in Cork.
Brilliant.
Someone like John, his knowledge and stuff around young front rowers and stuff. And I know there's mentor programs and there's certain people have mentored people, but this team has lost a lot of experience in the last few years. I probably keep referencing back to my time. But when you take Keith Earls out of the group, Peter O'Mahony, Conor Murray, you know, even go back to Zeebo, Andrew Conway. Who else am I missing? Stephen Archer.
Yeah.
Billy Holland. You know, people like that. There's a lot of people and a lot of experience there. And forgive me if I'm missing anybody there, but they've lost a lot of kind of experience and quality in the last number of years. Who they were all really important part of the 2023 URC win. Who knows where they go from here, but it is worrying and concerning.
Well, that is it for part one of this week's episode of The Red 78. If you want to listen to the full episode where we will continue our discussion about that defeat to Exeter and have a look ahead as well to Benetton coming up in the URC, you can become an Off The Ball member. Check out offtheball.com/join for all the details. You can become a member on the Goal Out app, Apple, Spotify or YouTube for $9.99 a month.
The Red 78. Nobody knows Munster rugby better.
I'd like to think I know a lot,